Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Here's the question. How many times have you asked me this question? You've called in. You've written in. Does my dog really love me? I can't tell you how many times I've heard that question asked. I'm at an event, a social event. Someone I don't even know walks up to me. Does my dog really love me? We will finally have the answer to that. We don't do this often enough, and that is talk about pet birds. You heard me right. And one of the big trends in Chicago, it's reality, aldermen. Some aldermen are upset about this, but it's real, are pet chickens who actually can make, well, pretty good pets. We have two experts on the phone, pet journalist Kim Thornton, also with Fear Free Happy Homes, and the co-author with Kim Thornton of Birds for Dummies, Dr. Brian Speer, who has been a veterinarian focusing on just birds for a very long time. And the name of the book is, I'm kind of complaining about it because it sounds like this is just solely a beginner's book, which it is, but I'll tell you, it's so much more than that because two experts have contributed to it, but also, and three experts really, because Gina Spadaforia is another co-author, but far more than that, this is filled with information about how to succeed with a pet bird, whether it be a pet budgie, whether it be a pet parrot, or whether it be an Amazon parrot, you know? So I want to start off, though, with the trend, and that is, well, those chickens, which seem to be everywhere, and it's happening all over the country. Kim, I'm curious, why do you think that pet chickens, I don't know that 15 years ago I would have predicted pet chickens would be a thing, but why do you think they have become a thing and a big thing?
I think they're just so sort of cozy and fluffy. if you hold one, they kind of snuggle up against you, and they're just cool. I've actually wanted chickens for a long time. My husband was amazed when we went to the state fair once, and I dragged him to see the chickens because I wanted some one day. I have never achieved that yet, but it's still on my wish list.
It's on your bucket list, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So why do you think it is, Dr. Spears, that it's chickens? And, you know, for a lot of people, it must be working because otherwise they wouldn't then. Okay, they're on their third generation of having chickens at this point in time because this has been a trend for a while. And what do people who want a chicken need to know?
These are domestic birds, so they're easier to accommodate their lives with us. They're smarter than a lot of people that we all know. And they become very good feathered friends in that regard when you get to know them. Why is just because they're really cool. Just like anybody you get to know well, when you know them, it's like, you know what? You're pretty cool. So they are captivating in that regard. It's huge. Very big deal.
And living in Chicago, Dr. Speer, it kind of gets cold outside. Ideally, I would suspect you want to see their natural behaviors, which means they should be spending some time outside. How cold can a chicken tolerate things? And should people then have a chicken coop and a warmer inside? I'm not a chicken guy, but it seems as though Chicago's not your ideal climate, but maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, you'd be surprised. There are many, many, many backyard chickens in Chicago and destinations north. But the more you have inclement weather, they do need to be able to keep dry, and they need to be able to keep warm. Most of the time, that can be accomplished by the structure of the hen house that you have. but further north, and you get down to below freezing, and for this, particularly the smaller breeds of chickens, then you might need some auxiliary warmth for those birds. But it's done, and it's done very effectively, literally in all climes all over the world.
So do you have any tips, just one thing, that people with chickens that maybe they commonly don't do that they should do?
Feed them an appropriate diet.
What is allows so? What's the right diet?
There are commercial diets made for laying hens, and so granted they're formulated for the commercial egg related industry, but that will meet their nutritional requirements. The common errors that people make is they feed cracked corn and kind of junk food equivalents, and it really sets the stage for a lot of problems.
Hmm.
So feed them well, allow them to be what and who they are, and get to know them as a friend for who they are. That will carry people great distances.
Kim, I have two silly questions for you, which, you know me, so that would not be a surprise. The first question is, what was I just going to ask? I'll ask you the question I could think of at the moment. And that is, do they really, I've laid an egg many a time just on this very radio show. Do they do the same? Do they really lay eggs?
Well, mine didn't because I had to, I didn't have chickens. Are you talking about birds or chickens?
Chickens.
Okay. Yes, they really lay eggs. That's one reason people like having them, so they can have their own homemade eggs.
Wow, that's amazing. And then the
fresh
other question.
Fresh from the bird.
Very fresh. The other question I couldn't think of, and now I've thought of it, another silly question, Kim, is can they be house trained?
There are chicken diapers if you have a house chicken. Brian, can you address whether they can be house trained?
I'm not aware of anyone specifically that has trained them to specifically go past the droppings in a unique location. The common thing is what Kim had mentioned is their little diapers or flight suits that you can put on when you're going to have them in the house, and then when you let them out, then they do their thing as well. So there are many pet chickens, ducks, geese, and other species that people do keep inside quite a lot that wear diapers.
Okay, fair enough. So they are domestic, and being domestic, we kind of have a head start with them, and they have a head start with us, I would argue. And that is so different than an Amazon parrot. It is so different than a hyacinth macaw. It is so different than an African gray parrot. And I can go on because there are so many, 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 many species of parrots who are all. The other thing is, Kim, they're also different than one another. So you've got, whether it's a Chihuahua or a Great Dane. Yes, if you're from Mars, you come to our planet and you see these two different dogs, you would think they're different species, but they are, of course, the same species. With parrots, we're talking about completely different animals in some ways with completely different needs, I believe, and they are not domestic like parrots. I mean, like chickens, I'm sorry. So can you address that?
These animals have evolved in unique ecosystems all over the world, and that's their genetic orientation. And when we bring them into captivity or propagate them, you still have some innate behaviors that will persist. So it is very important to be appreciative of the natural biology of their wild counterparts and try to not be intrusive, but to help them learn how to become bilingual. It's a term I like. It's like, I'm going to teach you some human things, and you teach me some of those hyacinth macaw things. And that bilingual interactive relationship, so to speak, really makes that relationship quite special when people get it. And that is one of the goals that we have with this book is let's help you get that foundation good and solid.
Well, I'm going to talk more about that because not only you mentioned the intelligence of chickens, and I would argue pet parrots in many ways are smarter than our incredibly intelligent dogs and cats. We'll talk more about that when we come back. The name of the book is Birds for Dummies. Kim Campbell Thornton is here and also Dr. Brian Speer on WGN. I'm flapping my feathers on WGN. Was that a bird I heard in the background?
That was a gray parrot. He just said hi.
Oh, I love that. This perfect Birds for Dummies. That's the name of the book. Dr. Brian Speer is here. Kim Campbell Thornton as well, Dr. Speer. We were talking about just how intelligent many of these birds are, whether they be chickens or completely different types of birds, the pet parrots. And we know from some studies that have been done, they not only can talk, for example, when they talk to us, the birds that can talk, they even understand what they're saying. So how smart are they?
It's a great question, Steve. They quantitatively, it's hard to factually answer that. Part of it is because the definition of intelligence comes from us, and it's based on our own view of how we define it. And when we back up and look at these animals as unique individuals within their own evolutionary kingdom, they probably look at us and think that we aren't quite so smart either. But they have massively powerful cognitive abilities. If we can slow down and get out of our own definition boxes and learn to appreciate it. So how smart are they? As smart as we're capable of recognizing. That's how smart they are.
I love that answer. It's an interesting answer.
That's a great answer.
Yeah, I think so too. Okay, Kim, this is a great book. I mean, this will win awards and all of that. I mean, the book is that good. Birds for Dummies, Brian Spear, Dr. Brian Spear, Kim Campbell Thornton, and Gina Spadafore. If people could take one thing away from this book, Kim, what would that be?
The thing that we really addressed a lot in this book is the human-bird relationship. And we know so much more now about interacting with the birds. There is completely new information in there on behavior, training, handling, enrichment, how to have a great relationship with your bird. And I think that's the most important thing in there. And then on the more fun side, I think one thing that tends to frustrate people is how quickly birds destroy their toys and perches. And we tried to deliver the message that that's a good thing because it means your bird is having a good time.
Yeah, it's
and
all.
So we've got some suggestions on some creative and maybe less expensive homemade toys that you can make for your bird so that you're not spending huge bucks every week on new toys.
There you go. Kim Campbell Thornton, saving bird parents money. That's a good thing. Dr. Brian Spear, also, thank you very much. Birds for Dummies. But
thanks.
This is really a great book, is the name of the book. Thank you, guys. Dr. Patrick Flynn is a technical advisor for Central Florida for Zoetis. And is a member of the board of directors of the Human-Animal Bond Association and has a master's in anthrozoology. What the heck that is, I don't know. Perhaps we'll find out about that because that ties in with this question, Dr. Flynn. It's a very simple one. Can we say that our dogs, or for that matter, our cats, love us and use the word love? I know you're a veterinarian, and if I asked a veterinarian that same question 40 years ago, I would have been, ha, 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 dogs don't love, you know. But what do we know, and I do mean the word know, what do we know today?
Excellent question. Thank you so much. And you're right. I mean, a while back, even fairly recently, people are wary of what we call anthropomorphism, which is, you know, kind of giving human traits to other animals. But yet there's been some really cool work recently, particularly with dogs. It's going to be a little more difficult with cats, but I have no doubt it's there as well. To examining them, not just on surveying people and how they feel or watching behavior, but really getting inside the bodies, our bodies and their bodies, and measuring what we know to be love. It's actually okay, probably, to use that word. We've been using words like hypersocial and gregarious. We've walked around that word for so long, but with some of the data that we've got now, and I'm sure what will come in the future, it's probably okay to say that now.
Can you allude to one of the or two of those studies that kind of push you in that direction?
There's two quickies I can tell you about. One was from about 20 years ago, actually. We looked at levels of oxytocin, which is well known in people and mammals in general to cause various different things, but it's usually associated with bonding and love and just attachment. And there was a cool study where they brought in people, measured their oxytocin levels, their own pet dogs' oxytocin levels, to get a baseline. They had them then play together in individual rooms for about 20 minutes and then checked it again. And the oxytocin levels had gone up twice in the humans, which does wonderful things like decrease your heart rate and your blood pressure, really beneficial things. But the cool thing was the oxytocin levels had doubled in the dogs as well. So we're really vibing off each other, and we're getting a really, truly mutual beneficial result. The other cool one was done more recently in, Emory University in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at functional MRIs. So if you blow out your knee, they're going to do an MRI, but it's just one picture. A functional MRI is actually looking at your brain in real time. And they were able to get dogs unsedated in these machines, expose them to different scents. So they did a smell of a familiar dog, an unfamiliar dog, a unfamiliar human, and the smell then of their owner. And there, before that, they had been able to identify the pleasure center, the happy part that lights up when you get good stuff or when you fall in love or when you get money or whatever. It's the same area in our brains as it is in dogs. And only one scent lit up their happy part of their brain, and it was the smell of their owner and, or their person. And how wonderful that is that they don't see us as other dogs or other people. They see us as something so wonderful that it literally affects their brains.
And it literally lights up. So the question is... So the question I have for you is, as a scientist, which you are, yes or no, do our dogs love us?
They do. They do. There's a, I'll reference a wonderful book that Clive Wynne wrote called Dog is Love. He spends a lot of time going through the science behind basically convincing himself that there's enough data to use that word. Mm-hmm. So it's a wonderful gift to everybody, and I absolutely believe, I've known it all along, but it's sure nice to see some data.
Yeah, and in fact, Dr. Wynn was on the show a couple of years ago when that book came out. The Human-Animal Bond Association, you're on their board of directors. What is the Human-Animal Bond Association?
The Human-Animal Bond Association is a great group of people from all sorts of diverse backgrounds, and we work to be a voice for all different types and angles and creatures that connect with us in the human or in the human animal world. We have kind of a veterinary base, but we certainly are not limited to veterinary or veterinary teams. All animal people are welcome. And it's a really great, very nimble group. We're changing, we're growing. And so anybody out there who's thinking about being a part of it, you're certainly welcome.
And you can learn more, humananimalbondassociation.org. Dr. Flynn, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm depressed. I walked in the Walgreens and they didn't have any more Valentine's Day candy. I know it was the 16th of February. I know that. But usually they do and it's on sale and I'm so excited about that and they didn't have any. But I purchased something else at that Walgreens and then, as happens, they said paper or plastic. And I'm also too cheap to pay the extra money now. If you live in the city of Chicago, it's, what, 10 cents extra, I think, for a plastic bag? But it isn't only that. It is the right thing to do, not only for the environment, but for our pets, which is what this is all about. So, yeah, I've been to Kigali. What? That's the name of a city, the capital city of Rwanda. Almost a million people live there, and no plastic bags. Never, ever. You won't find a plastic bag in Rwanda or in the capital city of nearly a million people, and it is certainly cleaner as a result. We've been to the Galapagos Islands. We've seen plastic bags in the ocean floating around. In fact, anywhere I've been in an ocean, I've seen plastic bags. And that definitely has begun to seriously impact wildlife in the ocean as well as plant life in the ocean. But all of that aside, it is potential. It does happen. It's not common where our pets get into trouble as a result of plastic bags. Now, think about it. These bags often smell like food. That's of interest to our dogs and cats. What's more, it is said that at least some of the plastic bags are manufactured with fish oils, therefore enhancing interest. Some cats are absolutely fascinated. What's more, those handles potentially can choke an animal. So, yes, I am concerned about plastic bags for that reason. So definitely when they say paper or plastic, choose paper. But even the handles on a paper bag can cause problems, and pets can choke themselves. Now, listen, this doesn't happen every day. And I was talking to Dr. Natalie Marks about it, and she said, well, she is more concerned about tennis balls, actually, and some other toys for dogs and cats, including those little plastic things you put over milk cartons that probably still smell like milk. And she has removed some of those from the insides of cats. So, yes, be careful about anything. But don't leave out plastic bags when you're not there, because potentially, indeed, you are asking for trouble. CBD, is that trouble for us or is that good for us or for our pets? We're going to talk about that next week. I've had so many requests from you to talk about that on a radio show, so we'll be doing that next week. with Dr. Jennifer Weiss of Cubbington. She will be here to talk about CBD products for pets. Is there anything to it or not? We'll talk to you next week, right here on WGN, Steve Dale's Pet World.